This is Tube Talk, and here we go.
Off of his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use of diving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. The buzzard told the monkey, you are choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free. The monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eye and said, your story's so touching, it sounds just like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. You are choking me, release your hold, then I will set you free. The monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eye and said, your story's so touching, it sounds just like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Yes, that was the Andrews Sisters. Jimmy just loves the Andrews Sisters, so there you go, Jimmy. I hope you like that one. That's a song usually connected with Nat King Cole, but the Andrews Sisters do a swell job there, and we opened up the program with Ella Fitzgerald looking for her little yellow basket. This is Tube Talk. I do not have a yellow basket, but we are your connection to the world of radio past. We do this every Friday night at 10 p.m. This program is brought to you by me, Paul Burish, our super deluxe webmaster, Chicago Jimmy. We emanate from Boston, Massachusetts, hub of the universe, and we have some questions for you, friends. Do you still look through your change for wheat cents, but wonder why? Do you still wish you could go into the dry cleaners or your local haberdasher and get your hat blocked? Do you still hang your laundry on the clothesline to dry? Well, if you do, this is your program. We're Vintage Too. We do it every Friday night at 10 on WRCA and streaming on the WRCA website. Even if you don't have a clothesline, this is your show.
E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lalé. Quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá, bambu.
Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá.
Fui a um banquete na casa do Zé Pequena. A mesa tava no sereno pra todo mundo caber. Tinha de toda qualidade de talha. Tinha mais homem que mulher, mas eu não tinha que comer bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Eu quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá, bambu.
Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá.
E no tabanquete de tu cujo referido, mulher que tinha marido, não passou a perdoa, não. Você dá nada para ele, não morre de comer quando eu como. Se o homem não tiver indigestão, bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Eu quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá, bambu.
Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Eu quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá.
Conheço um homem que tem 17 filhos que pôs tudo no desvio pra polícia empregar. A mulher dele de beleza ainda promete dar a luz a 17 e depois então para bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. E olha o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Eu quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá, bambu.
Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu, bambu. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lelê. Vai o bambu de bambu, bambu lalá. Quero ver dizer três vezes bambu lê, bambu lalá.
That's Carmen Miranda, and I'm not, though I am sporting my very nifty-looking Carmen Miranda headpiece, complete with pineapple, bananas, assorted tropical fruits. And, my friends, that's a topic that will be explored on later episodes of the show. Our guest tonight on Tube Talk is Rich Lee. He is president of the New Jersey Antique Radio Club. Welcome aboard tonight, Rich. Thanks for taking some time to spend with us.
Hey, Paul, it's great to be back with you. It's been, I think it's been about 18 months maybe since the last time we spoke.
Yeah, a little.
And did interview.
Little water under the bridge, as they say, but it was time to reconnect. So I guess you guys survived the winter down there with, I kind of keep an eye on your events down there. Did you have to cancel anything, or did you guys make it through?
You know, it's funny you mention that. I'm not one to cancel anything because it's so difficult to reschedule.
Yeah, it is hard.
There were a couple of times. There were a couple of our club meets the second Friday of the month, and there was times when it was just cat and mouse whether we were going to make it or not. But we never gave up, and we are a bunch of hardy souls, and we made it. And it may have snowed that morning, but we were able to get on the road that evening. So we were fortunately not to have to turn down anything.
Hey, you know, it was one of those things, because I'm, in addition to radios, I'm sometimes, especially when the weather is bad, I get a little obsessed with the weather. But, you know, usually it seems like New York City especially, and maybe Long Island, gets a little bit of a break. You know, they don't get quite the snow. And up here, usually it means like Cape Cod doesn't get quite the snow, but Boston up north gets it. And I think we all just got more than our fair share this year. So we did, our big event for the winter was Radio 45 in Westford, and it did snow the day before, but not too badly. And I have to say that attendance was great. There was a lot of good stuff. So, you know, good reasons to get out of the house, get out to a radio event, because you just go crazy sitting around by yourself. And after you've caught up on all your repair and restoration jobs, what, you know, what else do you got to do? You got to get out. So anyway,
well, we were fortunate also with our swap meets. We have our annual spring swap meets, and our e-board got together and we said, why don't we do an earlier swap meet? And so we pulled the 22nd of March, and of course spring starts the 21st. And it was a close one, figuring snow and sleet and rain, but turned out to be beautiful weather. So we're very fortunate to have had that. And it turned out to be a sellout. All of our tables were sold in advance, a few at the door. And we had the best gate we ever had. So
very
we were
good.
Very, very happy, happy, happy.
Well, it was a good thing the weatherman was wrong on that one. So you guys have a Princeton meeting coming up soon, though, don't you? Is it this week?
Yeah, it's this Friday. We alternate between Princeton University. Fortunately, we have a member of the club, Professor Mike, who enabled us to meet at one of the lecture halls. And
very nice.
I may have mentioned it to you before at our last together that here I am, this retired electrician Princeton at their giving a lecture. Here I am at a lecture hall in Princeton. It's like amazing.
Well, you know, that's
this could happen, you know.
It's almost as amazing as me actually being on the radio. So, you know, you never know. So you got to persevere and good things happen. Now, do you have a guest coming up, or is it just club business, or do you have a special guest coming this week?
Well, this week we have our own technical coordinator, Al Clays, and he's going to be speaking on it's about the 101st anniversary of regeneration, thanks to Edward Armstrong.
Very good.
So he has a talk together for us, which he's actually given before at InfoAge about a month ago. He gave that, so he'll be redoing that, rewind, so to speak, and it'll be great because he's a great speaker, and it's PowerPoint, and it'll be very enjoyable. I have to tell you, though, last month we had a wonderful speaker, and his name was Professor Joe Taylor from Princeton University. And again, here I am presenting to our group Professor Taylor, who won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1993.
Wow, that's cool.
With the discovery of the first binary pulsar. Now, I know I'm sure a smart guy like you know what a binary pulsar is. So.
Well, I know binary means two, and believe it or not, you know, I wear a lot of hats, and at one point I was a little more active in amateur astronomy, so it would be a pulsing system. You had two pulsars that were rotating around each other, right?
I just knew you
something
were a
like
smart
that?
Guy. Look at that. Yes, yes. So anyway, so the professor in his spare time, he's also a ham. And he spoke to us about his amateur radio feats, and one of them was to write a program on signal communications protocol to do with computer and transceivers, which talk to each other over long distances using the moon bounce and meteor scatter reflection. And believe me, it was way, way over my head. But
well,
a lot of the guys really enjoyed it, and the Q&A was wonderful.
Yeah, that's...
He was able to tour our facility at InfoAge, of course, on Museum, which, Paul, you got to get down. I know.
Well, you know, this is like a classic interview because we're digressing before we've even started. So two things I have to bring up, though. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, this is great. You know, we get this Nobel Prize professor. Well, I got a little something coming up in the show. I'm going to go through some news. And there's a big ham festival coming up called Near Fest. It's the New England big ham fest that's coming up in, I think, May, maybe. Anyway, one of the, you know, in the press release, they talk about, you know, ham and radio, the hobbies that have everybody involved, from taxi drivers all the way up to scientists and college professors. And it's really very true, is a very broad cross-section of people who are involved in radio. Now, one other thing, while you're on the topic of InfoAge, I saw this, and maybe you can share a little bit with us on this. InfoAge got some neat press, didn't they, where they featured in a, was it a newspaper or a magazine? I saw something go by on the Reflector on that.
Yeah, it's this, the latest was in a blog.
I see, okay.
And it's pointed out for many, many different reasons. I mean, a couple of months ago it had to do with Buckminster Fuller and some of his inventions in the late 30s and 40s, having to do this spin-off of his geodesic domes and some of the wartime facilities he was building or designing that he could be dropped into place, made out of aluminum and assembled within a day and habitable for troops and or communications or whatever. And there's one or two of them still at InfoAge, and it's a funny thing because you don't even know what they are. They look like giant mushrooms, and then they have a history. It's like everything else at InfoAge has a history somewhere along the line to do with mainly World War II, and that's probably what you picked up in that blog.
Yeah, that's great.
There's always something going on at InfoAge.
Yeah, and it's just great the way that you know, you guys have a presence there, and I know it helps attract in, as we talk a lot of times about younger people, different people, people who might not have an interest, you know, either in radio or science or scientifics in general. And, you know, it's fun stuff. It really is. And I know you guys are very committed to it. I see you're always looking to staff it with volunteers and all. So it's a big thing, and it's great that you guys can have a presence there and be such a great theater for radio.
You know, we're a membership of 224 at the moment. And when I put out the clarion call for help, if we need something in particular done, like what we did 2 weeks ago, we did a move on a Wednesday of future exhibits for the museum, had to move from A to B.
Yes.
15 people showed up.
That's
and
super.
Gave up their time and worked diligently to get it done, and it was all done in one day. So we can always take our hats off to that. But that's the NJRC. That's what we're about.
More volunteers is what every radio club needs, and we're always looking for them up here too. So it's great, especially when new people get involved too. It makes it all worthwhile. Now back to what we were going to talk about tonight.
What was that, Paul?
Well, let's see. I know NJAC. NJAC is a great group for a lot of reasons, but one of the things that I'm always keen on is you guys have a lot of contests. And we had a couple of folks on a previous episode when you had the DX contest. And I know presently you're involved in getting a couple of balls rolling here. A contest for homebrew radios and the best homebrew radio. And for a basket case story or basket case restoration. So maybe for some of those who aren't too familiar with the world of radio, what is a homebrew receiver? What makes something homebrew?
Well, let me read you the objective, or
sure.
Go over with you the objective of that that we've put together. We've had this contest going on, oh my goodness, probably about 15 years now, and it's always amazing what people come up with. But the objective of our homebrew equipment contest is the preservation, the tradition, and the building of your own electronic equipment. And it'll be judged in the July meeting. Now, we started this in January to give people a heads up. We usually do that.
Right.
Maybe it'll be 3 or 4 months, but what happens is people say, gee, you know, we need a little more time. No problem. So the judging will be in July. So that works out. So what we have is categories. We'll have a primitive receivers category, and then we'll have the beginners category, which pretty much is whatever you can put together as a serious attempt, you know, that has to be from scratch. And then the open category, which is any recently constructed homebrew radio receiver or transmitter. And then we have category 4, which is vintage reproduction, and you need to do a faithful reproduction of a 1920 to a 1939 homebrew radio. Now, if you look in our old books and our old catalogs, the builders of those days were young people, you know, teenagers, and it's great to find something like that that's a young person worked on back then, and to restore it, get it back to working condition for what they intended it for at that time. And of course, then you're working with the vintage equipment, the vintage capacitors, the air caps, and the like. But we do have one problem with the open category. We have a very, very smart fellow named Neville in the club, and every contest he wins. So the man is absolutely amazing.
Every kid has one of those in class, you know.
to the point, Paul, where he's actually brought in he built a Superhet radio with a digital readout on it, you know, and it just blew everybody away. He was the winner that year. So, and that was last year. So what I'm going to do this year is I know where he works, and before he can get to the meeting this year, I'm going to take the air out of his tires. That is a joke.
Either that or, like, bribe him just to stay away, you know. Yeah, we'll give you a gift card. Go out to dinner or something. Will you just leave us alone? No,
a real smart fellow, and you never know what they're going to come up with. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, that's great. So it sounds like some type of a kit, like a Heath kit or something like that, is not in the running here. This is something that you would cobble together yourself.
We're talking scratch. We're
very good.
The man will use an aluminum brake to make his own chassis. It's just amazing what he comes up with, and what other people come up with too.
Well, you know, that's really Roots Radio at its best, because, you know, prior to the, you know, true commercialization of radio in the late 20s and 30s, I mean, that's what radio was. It was tinkerers and experimenters and, again, you know, young people who were willing to study the books and try a few things. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, you go downstairs and there's your son. He's 15 and he's got a headset on and he's, you know, listening to an experimental station somewhere. And you know, so it really is sort of the roots of the hobby, and it's that can-do attitude that, you know, gets exemplified, you know, whether it's fixing something that was made in a factory or starting out from scratch yourself. It's a real radio spirit. So that it sounds like it's a fun contest. Now, does everybody vote? Is that how you decide on it, or do you have like a panel of experts who pick the best one?
Well, you know, there's winners according to category.
I see.
And we do vote on it. The members that are in attendance do vote on it. So it's I'm not going to say everybody's a winner, but it does rotate who does win, except for Neville. He's always in the open category.
And it's like anything else, though. It's the fun. You know, it's nice when you get recognized, but even if you're not in the prizes, so to speak, you know, you don't make the winner's circle, it's neat to have your creation there. Show it to all the other guys, and, you know, they'll tell you some stories about their stuff. And, you know, that's what it's really all about, too. So it sounds like a fun whether you win or you don't. You're going to have some fun at this event. Now, the other contest that's going on is the basket case. And, again, maybe for the junior out there who's or the casual listener, basket case does not refer to the host of this program. Okay, so this basket case refers to a radio that a lot of people would probably look at and say, you know what, I'm going to leave that for somebody else, right? It's something that just, you know, really needs a lot of work. Is that's the idea, to bring it back to factory specification?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I started this basket case restoration idea. And I can't say I coined it or invented it. What happened was I was contacted by a man named Serge Pinot from SQCRA. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, you know, this rings a little bit of a bell. I was going to mention this because I remember seeing, I think, in Antique Radio Classified at one point, the Quebec Club had some type of a basket case, you know, contest going on. And I vaguely remember it, but I don't remember how they worked it. But I don't know if it was open to everybody or just their own club. So he got a hold of you. What was he looking to see, if you guys would have some entries for his contest?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to try a little French here.
Okay.
Les Sociétés Québécoises des Collectionneurs de Radio Antique. And that is the International Antique Radio Restoration Contest Invitation.
All right.
And Serge contacted me about 2 years now. And he was saying that he came up with this idea 9 years ago, previous. So now we're talking like 11 years ago. And they have it as an international restoration club that you enter the contest from all over the world.
Wow.
So I got, I'll give you more information on that in a minute. But so what I did was I took from their group ideas of what we were to do. And with that, our general contest rules are that you need to take a minimum of 3 photos before condition must be provided, an exterior cabinet view, a rear chassis view, and an underside chassis view. The restorer shall provide a short written description of the radio's original condition and challenges faced during the restoration. The more complete the description, the better chance for a higher rating. Photos of the after condition of the area of the radio that are not observable, like under the chassis, must be provided. The radio must be operational. Since the entries are not expected all to be at the same level of disrepair, consideration will be given for the level of difficulty. Like, for example, if the mouse has chewed the oscillator coil and it has to be rewound, this represents a level of difficulty higher than simply replacing capacitors.
Sure,
to return the circuit to operation. So that's why good documentation is needed. So we've had this contest now for 2 years, and I'm not saying it's a highly attended contest because it's a lot of time, a lot of work, as you and we all know. But we've had some very interesting radios come by. Our treasurer, Harry Clancer, last year came through with a wonderfully restored Strombo Carlson tabletop. And he did all the preliminaries, took the photos, and presented them in a trifold manner, and blew everybody else away. And, he brought something back to life and showed us how to do it. And I think that helps all the younger members, too.
Sure.
Now, getting back with Monsieur Renaud, I'm going to give you their website, which is www.sqcra.org. And you will be totally blown away with the entries that they've had. Really, I think maybe some of the contestants take a radio, bring it out in the backyard, leave it in the rain for a couple of months, then run over it with a truck. Okay, then they take the pictures and they bring it back to life, and it's absolutely unbelievable. And they've had contests, like I said, for a few years now, and they've had submissions from New Zealand, France, Germany, just about every country that's not a third world country. Put something in the contest, and absolutely amazing.
Now, how is this guy's English? Because, you know, he sounds like a future guest, right?
Because
my French.
Yes,
you don't want to hear my French.
Well, let's put it. Wait a minute. You're in Boston. That's close to Canada. I mean, you must be getting some of your French transmissions.
Yeah, I do. You know, as a matter of fact, 7:30 I pick up a lot, and I get sports talk and hockey talk, and I don't know if it's a sports station or not. I used to get 9:40 out of Montreal, and I don't know what happened up there for a while. Years ago, it used to be like an all-news station. It was almost like a 10:10, but it was up in Montreal, and it came in very good, especially at night in the winters. And that's just, like, gone, completely gone. I don't pick anything up there. But we do get some stuff, and I have to say, sometimes in the summer on shortwave, I've picked up some, I used to pick up Canadian Broadcasting Company stuff. So we'll put him down on.
860 on the dial is French, and it's all talk, and you can make a little bit of it. And it comes out of Ontario, as a matter of fact, which is kind of unique.
Well, I'll make a note of that. So it's an interesting story.
Contact Serge, and something tells me he speaks English too.
Well, I'm sure he does. If not, I'm sure he's got somebody in the club up there. I know the whole Quebec thing and the French heritage, and I have a good friend at work who's from Montreal. So, you know, where push comes to shove, I could get her on the phone with them and get things sorted out, so you know, so we could do what we needed to do. But you know, again, it's neat because as we talked a little bit before coming on the air, not only sometimes even within your club, you know, you go and you say, well, this is a New Jersey thing, and I see the same people, or a New England or a California. You know, it's a nationwide hobby. It's a worldwide hobby, and it's really great when you get a sense of that and you feel you're on a much bigger team. And the whole thing about the basket case stuff is it's for the engineer and all of us. I mean, I marvel sometimes of different websites I visited, or if you see an article that somebody submits either to a club newsletter or to a publication, and they show you, here it is, and they show you, this is what I got. And then they start to show you, you know, they love to do it too. It's great, you know, the wonders of the internet and digital photography. Here's what it looked like after I got it out. And then, you know, the step by step, and this is my problem. And they go through it. And after about 15 pictures and a lot of narrative, it's very inspiring to see, you know, what people get out of it. There's a fellow down in, I think he's actually in New York State. And I don't know if he's hooked on with you guys yet. I think he's fairly new to the hobby. I see him. He goes under the handle of Old Radio Restorer or Old Restorer. And I see him on a Philco forum website. And I guess his forte really is woodwork, but he does do electronic work. He found a Philco Butterfly, a Philco 45. And, you know, the cabinet was just a disaster. And again, it would be something I would just pass on. Unless I needed parts off the chassis or knobs or something, I just wouldn't even go near it. This guy essentially fabricated about two-thirds of the cabinet. It looks absolutely mint. And, you know, he managed to get the chassis done too. So, you know, really in the spirit of preservation that exists in the antique radio hobby, these things go down as, you know, the gold medal winners. And it's really good to see it. So even though you might struggle with just getting a set recapped and getting the volume pot cleaned out and stop scratchy and restringing the dial, and that can be a challenge. You say, you know what? If you're willing to put the time and energy into it, you can find ways to get things done. And, you know, the hobby will support you, you know, whether it's people in your club or people on these internet forums that will offer you advice. So that must be a good one down there. Myself, I'm trying to get pickier, you know. It's like going to the pound to look at the animals. You know, you find these sad looking little things, and you say, "Well, if I don't take it, somebody's going to throw it out." And then you wind up with something invariably that 7 years later you haven't even done anything to. But well, at least I saved it.
The best is rediscovering it on your on the back of your workbench or shelf. I have one of those. My goodness, I don't even know when I bought
it. I know. Now, do you have any basket case experience yourself? Do you have a personal basket case radio that you recall in your restoration career?
I'm working on one myself, let me put it that way. And it's something I was always intrigued on. And I always enjoy when you have Ron Ramirez on, because I always think, wait a minute, I need a call-in show because I want to call Ron about this. And it has to do with a 1937 Philco High Fidelity 116.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And it's sort of entry-level console high fidelity. And I have, well, let's say I have one. Well, I probably have about three in different parts. And I intend to make one out of the three. Chassis I've got, but to me the real challenge is the woodwork, and it's not something I think of myself as being very good at, but you know, it's about time I learned to do better on it. So that's my deal that I'm working on at the moment. It's the one, Joe, with the what they call the acoustic clarifiers.
Yes, yes.
The other people look at it and says, well, what happened to the field coil on your speakers? He said, no, that's the design. It was there for a couple of years.
Right, right.
And I understand Philco bought it back in the late 50s for a few months or something also.
Yeah, and it's a little marketing, but it also has effect. And, you know, my advice is if you get stuck and you can't get some help in the club, hop on, join the Philco forum, and there's all kinds of guys, Ron included,
who'll
offer you some advice. So
it's bookmarked on all my computers.
Very good. He'll be happy to hear that. You know, he works real hard on that site, so it's nice when he gets some encouragement. Now, a couple of other quick things here because the clock really runs. Now, you guys did a very neat thing. This was a while ago, not a recent event, but you took a trip down to the Armstrong site in Alpine, New Jersey, and I saw some of the photos. that you guys posted, and what a cool visit. And how was that received by the membership? Did everybody have fun?
Well, when you enter the building, which is 1937 engraved, not on a cornerstone, but a keystone above the doorway, and you enter through, and then there's the portrait of Edward Armstrong staring at you. It's, for some people, it's almost a religious experience, Let me put it that way. You are in the annals of where he actually invented and worked on and experimented with early FM. So believe me, it's hallowed ground for us.
That's
and
great.
I'm very, very fortunate because I live about 15 minutes from there.
Oh, super. Well, that even makes it better. It's like going to the Hall of Plaques, you know, at the Baseball Hall of Fame. People start talking in whispers and, yes.
Exactly. And we as a club and myself personally have a good relationship with the chief manager there, Dave Edmondson, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's enabled us to tour, and he invites us back. It's pretty much, Rich, call me when you want to come back.
Well, that's great.
And I'd love to be able to do that again if I can organize it before the spring turns of the summer.
Well, you know, that's a great event, and you know, we get a bus from New England. Maybe we could work something out on that, because that's one
of
those.
That's
a big draw, and it's a brand name, you know. So it's hard not to want to go on something like that. Now, one other thing, a little point of interest here, and I know you were going to add something here, but for those who may not be aware of this, after 9/11, when the communications equipment on the World Trade Center obviously was not going to be functioning. Didn't they use Alpine to do some broadcast work?
Yes, it was a backup for all four major networks, and they got it up and running within 4 days.
That's super.
Dave has a vast experience in doing that and telling you the stories about it. And, you know, people think, oh, it's an old antenna. What does it do?
Right,
nothing.
Right.
It's just a... Some people in the neighborhood, it's a very, very wealthy neighborhood, Alpine, New Jersey, and there's actually blogs and websites against the antenna.
Of course,
their houses were built 10 or 15 years ago, and the antenna was built in 1937, they forget about that.
Well, I understand. You know, Armstrong would be proud that it was put to use, and, you know, especially, you know, considering...
You may not know this, Paul, that... Armstrong was, as a boy at home, was directly across the river in Yonkers on Warburton Avenue, and he must have fantasized at one time about building the antenna across from the Palisades, which sits 900 feet, 400 feet, I believe, is the benchmark above river, and that's his antenna. So, you know, I can only imagine him looking out as a boy across and saying,
sure.
Wouldn't that be a great spot for an antenna?
No, you know, that's all part of the intrigue of the thing. That is so cool. That is very cool. You know, we had a great guest on, too. We had Gary Frost on, who your pal, Dr. Alex Magoon, was nice enough to connect me with. And we did a two-part program on Armstrong, and I tell you, we could have done a four-part program. We could have made it the Edward Armstrong Hour. And had him on. I mean, he's a fascinating, fascinating character, and the connection, you know, to New York, New Jersey is so strong too. Now, one other thing I have to share with you before we run along here, because we're going to have to call it a night here soon. But
too bad.
You know, as some people know, we unfortunately lost a couple of firefighters up here, not far actually from where I'm sitting right now, on right across the Charles on the Back Bay, in a nasty fire that was fueled by these incredible winds we had. And I have to say, you know, I've looked at the NJAC site and certainly seen the pictures of WTC, and you guys remember, and, you know, it's a very nice thing. It's a beautiful thing. And everybody does. We remember as well. But the show of support from the New York and New Jersey fire departments up here for these guys was unbelievable. Not only do they do a super job of protecting you folks down there, they really are goodwill ambassadors, too. It was a nice bunch. My wife went to one of the funerals and got to meet a couple of them and was very impressed. So despite the fact...
It's a brotherhood, yeah.
Despite the fact they were looking for cheeseburgers and beer at 10 in the morning. But hey, you know, come on. I've done that myself. They just needed a little, you know, it was a long trip up. I know some of them came and stayed. Some of them took buses, but it was great to see. And, you know, so thanks again. You see a fireman down there, say thanks for coming up to Boston, because as a city, we appreciate it a great deal. Other than that,
They're known as New York City's bravest, you know.
I know. And, you know, as usual, the clock is ticking. Rich, thank you so much for coming on tonight. It's been a hoot having you on again. Thanks for the update on the contests and all the New Jersey Antique Radio Club activities. And you can visit the New Jersey Antique Radio Club website. It's a nifty one, and it might give your club, if you're a member of another radio club, a lot of ideas. But it gives you a real nice feel for some of the events and the speakers and the contests and how they run their show down there. So I'd encourage everybody, Google it up and check it out. Rich, have a great night. Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Paul. And you're doing a great, wonderful job for our hobby. And believe me, we're so happy to have you back on the air. Really, really wonderful.
Thanks for the kind words. Hey, you have a great night.
All right, talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those eyes? Gosh, oh, get up, how'd they get so lit up? Gosh, oh, get up, how'd they get that size? Golly gee, when you turn those heaters on, woe is me. Got to put my cheetahs on. Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Oh, those beepers, how'd they get more ties? Oh, where'd you get those eyes?
That's the Mills Brothers. Tube Talk once again would like to thank Rich Lee, president of the New Jersey Antique Radio Club, for coming on the program this evening and sharing with us a little bit about the current contest, the old basket case and homebrew. Sounds like some fun down there. And again, I would encourage you to visit their website. Google up NJARC, NJARC, and you can check it out too. And there's a lot going on in the world of radio here, so we got to get rolling here with some radio news, breaking news. The end of winter, and there's all kinds of radio news, radio events. Please visit CaliforniaHistoricalRadio.com for more details on the journey of the California Historical Radio Society out of the desert of the KRE site into the promised land of their new home in Alameda, California. They still need our assistance. They've made a remarkable amount of progress. The guys out there would have really appreciated it if you can help out. Lend them a little support. They'd be so happy. Coming up, I've received a press release here over the wire from Warren Eli. Nearfest is coming, which is the big New England Amateur Radio Festival up at the Deerfield, New Hampshire Fairgrounds. It's coming soon, friends. May 2nd, May 3rd. 2014. And, you know, just a little quote here, because I thought this was great in their press release. The next time you tap in a text message to your smartphone, think about this. Radio hams have been sending messages to each other for over 100 years. In fact, much of the technology that allows you to enjoy the social network was invented by hams or radio amateurs, the founders of the world's first social network. How about that? Nearly a century before anybody ever heard of the internet. And, you know, this is known as the Woodstock of amateur radio. It's a big event. Apparently, they even do some wonderful things with electronic scholarships for schools and all. So, you know, if you're interested in it, check it out. Head up there. It should be fun. Not only do you find lots of ham gear, you'll also find the occasional vintage radio, tubes, and a lot of swell folks. So you guys really have to check it out. And I have a question for you. How do you spell excitement? I'll tell you how. NEARC.net. Yes, that's it, folks. The New England Antique Radio Club, Antique Radio, and Flea Market is coming up. This time, it's we got a special guest speaker after the program. This is Saturday, April 26th, 2014, Brookline Event Center, Proctor Hill Road, Brookline, New Hampshire. Check out NEARC.net, NEARC.net, for more details. The special guest speaker is Dr. Ralph H. Baer, video game pioneer, inventor, and engineer, will be speaking in the hall. It promises to be a great day. And don't forget, the historic radio club, Delaware Valley Historical Radio Club. I'm losing my voice here. DVHRC presents the Antique Radio Show at Cootstown coming up May 9th and 10th at Renninger's Grounds down in Pennsylvania in Cootstown. So you can check out the Delaware Valley Historic Radio Club site for more details on that. And I'm almost talked out. I got to play some music. Yes, that's the Benny Goodman Sextet with Swedish Pastry from May of 1948. And we had such a blast chatting with Rich Lee, we didn't really give a program ID during the interview there. So to remind you all, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us at the top, the summit. This is Tube Talk. You have reached the zenith of the independently produced fine radio experience. If you would like to drop by our virtual radio clubhouse and say hi, you can drop us a line at tubetalk1@gmail.com. Visit the show at tubetalkclassicradioshow.org. And yes, Jimmy, I will get you some new pictures for the website. And again, folks, just not to sound like a broken record, ha ha ha, get up off your good intentions and check out the California Historical Radio Society's website. If you can support them in their move, please help them. Check out the progress they've made. It's really a fantastic testimony to what a radio club can accomplish. And it's a great example of radio and radio preservation out there. So do what you can to help them out. It's almost time for us to head out. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your listenership. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell the people you don't like. Have them listen to Tube Talk. That's Billie Holiday, and I'm Paul Burish for Tube Talk saying thanks for listening. Good night, gang, and they'll never get our radios away from us as well. Good night, gang.
All around the chimney top, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought 'twas all in fun. Pop goes the weasel. I've no time to wait or sigh, no patience to wait till by and
weasel. Oh, weasel. Monkey laughed and laughed and laughed and thought it was all in fun. Oh, weasel. I had no time to wait or sigh. No time to wait till by and by. Kiss me quick, I'm off, goodbye. Up goes the weasel. Thought 'twas all in fun, so pop, pop goes the weasel. I no time to wait or sigh, no time to wait till by and by. Kiss me quick, I'm off. Goodbye, pop goes the weasel. Pop, pop, pop goes the weasel. Pop, pop, pop goes the weasel. Pop goes the weasel.
Please, babe, for goodness sake.